Go to Die. I am your host, DJ Spectre, coming to you undead only on Penguin Radio. Tonight's feature, which we are resurrecting and dissecting, was written, directed, and produced by one of the first artisans of So Bad It's Good cinema. It stars the Dark Prince of Hollywood, Bela Lugosi. Yes, Dracula himself. And we will learn how Lugosi's life took him from the silver screen to what I will describe as the aluminum foil screen. And we'll have a fun little trivia game. But before we get into any of that, allow me to introduce tonight's guest who I am summoning from the void. Cal Bauer, how are you?
Good.
How you been?
It's been good. It's been hectic.
Yeah, that's one way to say it.
Yeah.
I feel that. So, we had a little discussion beforehand about whether or not it's the right film. Did you watch Bride of the Monster?
Bride of the Monster by Ed Wood, yes. It was an event trying to find it online, and fun fact, I eventually just found the entire movie on the actual Wikipedia article.
Oh, okay, that's smart. I had to pay for it.
Yeah, no, they just have it on the Wikipedia article, whole thing.
Oh, man. Oh, dear. Well, don't I look like a fool?
How dare you pay people for their art?
Well, okay, this isn't going directly to Ed Wood. I think Rhino owns all of Ed Wood's stuff.
Well,
now.
I'm pretty sure... Isn't Ed Wood also probably dead?
He's dead.
Yeah, so,
R.I.P. to a real one.
I'll throw a couple of dollars at his grave next time I'm over there.
Yeah, that would be nice. Mm-hmm. Speaking of him, let's talk about his work, Bride of the Monster. How did the movie find you?
Listen, man, you know I like a good mad scientist movie.
Yes.
Bela Lugosi is a... Can I say DILF on radio?
I think maybe it's safer not, because this is a Catholic school, amen.
God bless America.
For the nuns, no.
Bela Lugosi is a national treasure.
He is.
And a beautiful, beautiful man.
You know, he really does give it his all, and I want to talk more about that in the second part of this, and also the third part, and also kind of the end, because that's kind of one of the most interesting things about this movie, is how Bela Lugosi came to it.
Yep.
But yeah, let's talk about what happens. So... The movie is about a monster in a lake, but the monster's just an octopus.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. Especially since octopuses, maybe the monster's aspect is the fact that octopuses generally aren't, like, freshwater creatures.
You know, I also think just the main thing is that the scientist is the monster, and he's a monster for taking this beautiful creature, which of half the time is B-roll, and putting it in a lake.
Yeah.
This beautiful rubbery man.
It's a commentary on SeaWorld before SeaWorld even existed.
Yes, that's what it was. It's at the heart of it, really. And another thing that I thought was interesting about it was the kind of anti-eugenic statement, which we'll talk about more in the second half.
Mm-hmm. It's got a lot going for it. Maybe not all of it was intentional, but it's got a lot going for it.
Yeah, and Bela Lugosi is a scientist who's trying to make, as he puts it, a master race.
Mm-hmm.
We're not putting words into Mr. Bela Lugosi's mouth.
Yep. I feel like we should specify that it's not Lugosi himself, but rather Dr. Eric Voronoff.
Oh, you got names!
I do got names! I know so many names. I know at least three of them.
Yeah, I just know Janet, and then I remembered. So Janet is this girl who's all like, I'm gonna show my fiance that there is a monster, and then of course they have to dress her up in a pretty wedding dress.
Of course.
And she's the titular bride of the monster.
Well, of course.
Well, I want to know why the scientist has that wedding dress, honestly. What you got going on, Dr. B?
When you are a creepy B-movie scientist, sometimes that's just what you gotta have.
Yeah. You know, when you get to a certain age.
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has those phases where it's like, you just think about boys, you just think about your career, you just think about wedding dresses and dressing up weird kidnap victims in those wedding dresses.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah, and I remembered, speaking of the octopus, a lot of people might know this movie from the Mystery Science Theater episode, mm-hmm. where they riff on it. It's the one with the man wrestling the rubber octopus in a shallow pit of water.
MST3K, yes.
Yes.
It was, yeah.
It's that one. But yeah, girl wants to prove there's a monster. Fiance is all like, there's no monster. She goes out and finds Lobo, who's Tor Johnson.
Yep, and Lobo is... I want to call Lobo a Caliban-type figure. Like, you know the Caliban archetype?
I don't.
The Caliban archetype of some sort of individual who has some sort of deformity or anomaly to their personage that makes it so that they seem less than capable, and they are forced into a role of servitude. So, Lobo is a Caliban.
Okay, yeah, I could see that. He's a Caliban, is that, am I saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
With a heart of gold, because he ends up saving Janet, because I know it's pink because I watched the colored version. He likes her little pretty pink hat and gives it back to her.
Wow.
And, yeah, fiance dude saves her. It's very basic.
I didn't watch the colored version. I could just find the black and white version, which is on Wikipedia.
They're very different creatures. Yeah, the color really didn't improve anything.
I mean, it improved the pink hat experience.
It did. I will say that. I was like, wow, that's a pink hat.
Mm-hmm.
And the bird. It improved the bird for me.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, wow, this is all a bunch of shades of gray.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. I'm going to say something awfully bold.
Can we say something awfully bold?
Yeah, I didn't think this film was too remarkable.
No, definitely not. I feel like as far as movies that go places to die, there are far more impressive pieces of terrible, awful cinema.
And when we return, we'll be talking about the more impressive aspects of this movie when we come back on Cinema Cemetery. And we're back to Cinema Cemetery, and we're going to be talking about the more interesting aspects of the movie, or at least things that I found were more interesting than the movie itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really didn't think this was the worst movie.
No. It's far from the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the worst elements of the movie. What did you think were the worst?
I think that... Is it bold to say the plot?
No. I wouldn't say so.
Because, I've watched a lot of movies where the plot is inarguably bad. But, like, this one seemed to be extremely just thrown together. It seems like a very everything but the kitchen sink type movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I love a lot of movies with some really terrible plots. This is not one of those. This is just like, it doesn't quite seem like they knew what story they wanted to tell with this one, you know?
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, because I, you know, thinking about it, I thought the plot was very standard, like, monster in the forest, person goes out to, irrational woman goes out to find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
But yeah, and then they throw that crazy scientist in there, and it gets a little bit more muddled.
Yeah, like, I love Dr. Voronoff because, again, I have a passion for mad scientists. That's one of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
But, what was he doing there?
He's not a very good one.
It's not a very good one. Like, also, what was he doing there?
Yeah, what was he doing out there? Well, I mean, he was, like, at one point, he was all like, I'm a dog. I'm living like a dog. Here with Lobo, my best friend. Yeah, some of the things I thought were the worst were, the makeup was pretty bad.
Very
harsh edges. Excessive B-roll. Do you know what B-roll is?
I am vaguely familiar.
Well, I'll just explain it for the folks at home. So B-roll is essentially just, this would be a great film to define B-roll with, because it's just footage of something inserted somewhere. So, like, if you're watching a newscast and the reporter is talking and there's footage of something else going on, that's an example of B-roll. And in this film, because they couldn't get actual octopi or alligators or snakes, a lot of times people just get attacked by B-roll.
Attack of the B-roll.
Attack of the B-roll. A lot of times, yeah, they're at the very end, spoilers, I suppose, the spooky old house catches on fire, but it's a different house. It's a different one than the one that they've been showing this whole time.
Well, you know, sometimes maybe they just had an exterior decorator out when all the spooky stuff was happening.
You know, maybe. Who in your opinion was the worst performance?
So, this is a character that seems to show up in a couple of Ed Wood's works, but Officer Kelton really didn't do it for me.
Really?
No.
Was he the homicide captain?
I believe so.
Because I just love that bird.
The bird is really good.
Okay.
But,
I just want to explain really quickly. So there's a bird that Officer Kelton has, and there's just a point where he has the bird on the desk, and the bird gets on his glasses, and he uses the glasses as a swing. That was adorable. Best part of the movie. But, yeah, he himself was not great.
Yeah, it's... That ain't it. Wasn't quite it. Officer Kelton is apparently a cinematic constant within the Ed Wood cinematic universe. But, right?
I didn't know there was a universe.
Yeah, no, there's an Ed Wood cinematic universe. Planet 9 for Outer Space and Night of the Ghouls are also part of this cinematic universe, also known as the Kelton Trilogy.
Oh, man.
I bet you can't guess why.
I couldn't.
Yeah, in the Kelton Trilogy, Officer Kelton is the only character that appears in all three of the films.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, it's...
The best character.
To call it a cinematic universe is a bit of a stretch.
A bit loose, to say the least. Yeah. What was your favorite quote?
Lord.
Can I throw mine out there?
Yes, absolutely.
So my favorite quote was just, "He tempered in God's domain," and the guy literally says it like that, and then the film just ends. Because the credits happened before this, and this, "He tempered in God's domain," and it just ends. And it's like, yeah, I guess he really did.
Yep.
He really went there.
This man sure did temper in God's domain.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there were just so many.
So many words were said.
Mm-hmm. I was a fan of the line, "Don't mind Lobo, he's as armless as a kitchen." Because what does that mean?
I think maybe he meant kitten, but, like, yeah, his accent didn't help Mr. Lugosi there.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when I thought he called someone a pico de gallo, but...
Yeah, I think that we should bring back the phrase "harmless as a kitchen." I think that we should make it,
It's just a new vernacular, you guys.
Yeah, you know, because, like, maybe they just heard you wrong. Maybe they actually said kitchen. Who knows?
Who knows in the world of Edward?
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to talk about this just because I mentioned it a little bit in the first half. And I do think it's interesting, but the anti-eugenics message, like, it's not super heavy-handed, but the scientist man is trying to make a master race. And I think especially given Edward's kind of relationship with gender. And the anti-eugenic statement. I just thought that was kind of interesting. It was one of those things that made me go, hmm.
For sure. No, it's definitely an interesting sort of...
It's just a fun little thing he throws in there.
Mm-hmm. Just because. Why not?
Why not? Let's get a little crazy.
Let's have a little fun. Let's go a little crazy.
Let's go a little anti-eugenics. And I think that is also an interesting thing. Because as we're going to talk about a little bit later, World War II did really change how people... what kind of media that people consumed.
Absolutely.
With horror films specifically, because Ed Wood was kind of one of the few who kept on doing it. And when we come back, we'll be discussing Lugosi's journey from silver screen to, as I like to put it, aluminum foil screen. Because I don't even think that this is a bronze screen, baby. This is aluminum foil.
No, this is 100% aluminium.
Yes, when we come back. And we're back, and,
it's
about to get a little scary in here, because we're going to talk about the failure of a career, the scariest thing in our adult lives. But I thought that I'd talk more about, Lugosi than Ed Wood, because I figured I'd be seeing Ed Wood again, and maybe you, if you'd want to come on this adventure some more with me.
Oh, of course. You know I love bad movies and have nothing else to do with my time.
Oh, good. Delightful. So, I will say, I may have put all my eggs in the wrong basket on this episode, because I realized that Lugosi is going to be in more movies that we see, but I thought that I saw Plan 9 from Outer Space in the list. So just for the clarity, for those of you who are first-time listeners, I am choosing these movies from the book 150 Movies You Should Die Before You See by Steve Miller. And I'm pretty sure Plan 9 from Outer Space is in there.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
Yeah. I know Zombies on Broadway has Lugosi in it.
Mm-hmm. Plan 9 from Outer Space was Lugosi's final role.
Well, we'll get into this a little bit, but I heard that he wasn't in it, but he was in the promotional material for it.
He was in it. He was just in a very small role. Because he died during the production of Plan 9.
Yes. And speaking of his death, let's talk about his birth. So, Lugosi was born in Transylvania, actually. Fitting.
Legend.
He had a very strict father, and he ran away from home at the age of 12 to become an actor. And, so what he did was he hung around outside of a theater until finally somebody offered him a part on stage, and he would work tirelessly to perfect each character that he played. Bela Lugosi Jr. would say about his father's acting, this was so ingrained in his life that he really was first and foremost an actor.
Mm-hmm.
In 1913, Lugosi was invited to perform in the National Theater of Budapest, which is kind of the Broadway of its time. It was big.
Yeah.
He mostly played supporting roles, but he met a lot of skilled actors and directors in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then World War I happened.
That World War I.
It'll mess up your career. But actually, okay. So the Budapest actors were exempt from being drafted, but Lugosi wanted to fight and for his country, so he ended up joining the army. And he was injured in the first line of the Skeet Patrol and finished the war in the hospital. And I'll add a little ominous lightning to the fact that he was injured. Yeah, Kel, where's your the metal sheet for the lightning sounds?
They took it back after we were done with It's a Wonderful Life.
A shame.
I know.
Lugosi returned to acting in Budapest, and he played a variety of roles, including Hamlet and Macbeth. And to kind of further show what a wide range he had. So the way that the Budapest theater worked was that actors were compared to one another in the roles that they played. And Lugosi was ranked to be number one at playing Jesus.
Wow.
He was really good at playing Jesus.
Good for him.
Yeah. And no, it's crazy because I looked up, because the documentary that I got all this information from is Bela Lugosi, Hollywood's Prince of Darkness, directed by Kevin Burns, not Ken Burns, or I don't know if it is Ken Burns, but I don't want anybody adding me and saying that's actually Ken Burns. But it says directed by Kevin Burns. But in the documentary I watched, it showed pictures of him, and he did look like our Western idea of Jesus. And so post-World War I, Budapest was full of revolutions. And the Budapest Actors Guild sided with the revolutionaries in hope of improving working conditions. But that failed, and Lugosi was branded as a traitor because he was kind of at the forefront of most of the protests, and he ended up fleeing to Vienna, and he acted in some German theater and some German films, but he wasn't really satisfied with that. But I did want to mention one play that he starred in, Red Poppy, because it earned him the reputation of being a sex symbol. Hoo-hoo.
Uh-huh.
So he ended up working as an engineer for a ship, and he moved to New Orleans and then to New York. And he started starring in American films, but he ended up being typecast because of his accent. And this really hurt his pride because he really prided himself on playing a diverse role of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1927, he was offered a role in a British play that was coming to Broadway. Any guesses what the play was?
Pirates of Penzance.
No.
Oh.
It was Dracula.
Oh. Well.
And he's offered... a good guess. I commend you.
Thank you.
And he initially rejected the role of Dracula, but then they came back and he said yes. So the role made him a star, and it made the play Dracula big. And Universal decided that they were going to make Dracula into a movie, but they initially didn't offer Lugosi the part, and Lugosi made it his goal now to play Dracula in the film version, and then he was. And so Universal wanted him to also play Frankenstein, but he wasn't interested in playing a mute role, and also there was going to be a lot of...
Frankenstein or Frankenstein's monster?
Frankenstein's monster. They want him to play the creature. And, he wasn't interested in playing a mute role. Thank you, Cal, for that.
Mm-hmm. Got a vibe check.
And he turned it down and instead was in Murders at the Rue Morgue, which did really poorly, and Universal wouldn't hire Lugosi again. And so Lugosi's response to Frankenstein being such a huge hit, knowing that he turned that role down, is he never turned down another role. Ominous thunder again. He never got a contract with Universal again. But Universal would come back and pair Lugosi up with Karloff in other movies, but then, whoopsies, that darn World War II happened. And, so Lugosi helped in the...
Those dang Germans with their human rights violations.
They really did mess things up, didn't they? They messed up a good thing. And Lugosi helped in the war effort, but in the 40s he started developing leg and back pain, but Lugosi continued to work. Once again, I ominous thunder cracking. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Lugosi would play the creature in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and the film did really poorly. And also, I just gotta say, Lugosi looks weird as Frankenstein's monster. He looks more like Herman Munster than our sort of idea of the Boris Karloff Frankenstein. But would Lugosi be able to resurrect his career after this flop? Find out when we come back to Cinema Cemetery, only on Penguin Radio. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Ooh, it's a little spooky up in here, but it's not too scary. The kids can listen too. We can't swear or make any dirty jokes. But yes, we'll be right back.
I've been banned.
No, Lugosi could not resurrect his career after this flop, which is real, real unfortunate. Or at least it never really got to the point that it was before. And Lugosi's leg and back pain got worse, and it got to the point where he was prescribed morphine for his pain, and he became addicted as a result. And I theorize that maybe the pain came from the injuries he suffered in World War I. However, nobody really confirmed that in the documentary, so I don't know.
But it can hardly compare to the pain felt by his damaged career.
Yes. Most importantly, his scarily declining career. So he could still perform at this point, but the lifestyle of performing would be a lot for his body, with a lot of touring and the acting lifestyle isn't exactly good on the human body.
Yep. Nope. It is not.
Nope. His last role in a studio film would be Abbott and Costello Meet the Wolfman, where he would reprise his role as Dracula.
Good for him.
And at this point, less audiences were interested in scary movies, and that was kind of what he was typecasted in. So it came to the point where only Ed Wood was offering him roles, and I'm sure his drug use also made it a little bit harder to work with him, so Edward, an up-and-comer, would be more likely to deal with that. And in 1955, Lugosi would commit himself for drug treatment, and he was one of the first actors to be open about his drug problem. And in 3 months, he was fully recovered. Good for him. Mm-hmm. And he expected coming out that studios would offer him roles, but they didn't. And because I think, like, a part of the problem was the press really advertised his drug problem in, like, this kind of, like, a, ooh, ooh, he has a drug problem. Yes, some gossipy goose. Mm-hmm. So the only person who continued to offer him roles was Ed Wood. And Lugosi would die 2 years after his recovery at age 76. And in the documentary, his son said that while he isn't happy seeing his dad in these really bad films, he realizes that it was probably best for his dad to be doing some kind of acting, because that's what Lugosi really loved to do. It probably would have been harder for him if he didn't act than being in these bad films. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wanted to kind of put that little positive touch on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's like, maybe you're in some bad stuff, but if you're doing what you love, can't blame a man for that.
Yeah. And that's kind of an interesting parallel to Ed Wood, too, because he, like, the things he was making weren't good, but he was so happy making them. Mm-hmm. So they were kind of kindred spirits in a way.
Yep.
And now we've entered our last segment of the show, Bela Lugosi Trivia, or as I like to call it, how well do you know Bela Lugosi? So this is just stuff from the documentary that I thought was interesting, but it wasn't really important enough to put in his life and career synopsis.
All right, let's go.
Okay, so Lon Chaney was originally offered the role of Dracula in the film version of Dracula, but why didn't he take the part? A, he saw Lugosi's version of Dracula on Broadway and he knew he couldn't be as good. B, he refused to work for Universal again. Or C, he had died.
I'm gonna go with C.
C is right.
Woo!
You're doing great so far. How many times did Lugosi marry? A, 3 times. B, 5 times. Or C, 10 times.
Now, you see, I didn't expect the numbers to keep getting bigger there.
Oh?
I didn't expect the numbers to keep getting bigger there. I want to say 3 times.
It was actually 5 times.
5.
So not a crazy amount, but more than the average bear.
Yeah.
And Lugosi's son would say that he believed... So, Lugosi had married when he was acting in Budapest and fled to Vienna, but the wife's parents made her divorce him and come back to Budapest, and Lugosi's son says he thinks that that was the woman he really loved, which is saying something, because, mm-hmm. like, if your son from the not mother... If your son from your current wife says that you loved the person before your current wife more, then, you know.
Yeah.
How short was Lugosi's shortest marriage? A, 1 year, B, 2 months, or C, 4 days?
4 days is very funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say 4 days.
It's 4 days, baby! What specifically about his performance in Red Poppy branded Lugosi as a sex symbol? A, he was so physical in his onstage, let's call it lovemaking, that he bruised his co-star's ribs. B, The critic reviewing the play's wife fainted during an especially steamy scene. His review read, "Leading man Bela Lugosi's onstage passion reaches such intensity that not even the audience is able to resist his magnetism." Or C, "Lugosi's co-star Estelle Winwood was so enamored by him that she left her then fiancé at the altar in hopes of pursuing a relationship with Lugosi, despite them not speaking the same language, and this is ultimately why their relationship failed."
Oh, man.
A lot there.
I can see all three of these happening. I want it to be the altar one, because, like, imagine just ruining a marriage like that.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I'm gonna go with C.
It's A.
Oh.
Yeah. That really was the 20s, wasn't it?
Yep.
Wow, he hurt a woman. Fantastic. He's great. What did Lugosi request to be buried in? A, his Dracula cape. B, a pin his mother gave him on his 12th birthday before he left home. The pin he considered was a good luck charm and he would secretly wear it in every performance. Or C, the crown of thorns he wore in his portrayal of Jesus that he secretly stole from the theater.
I think it's the Dracula cape, right?
Yeah, that's right. I realized after I was done asking, like, oh man, you do know a lot of weird stuff. But it was arranged for him by one of his close friends to be buried in his full Dracula costume. And who arranged that? A, Ed Wood. B, a group of boys who befriended Lugosi after they saw his performance in Abbott and Costello Meet the Wolfman. Or C, a group of dedicated female fans who called themselves the Mina Girls after Dracula's deceased wife.
Ed Wood sounds right.
Ed Wood. No, that was just a fun little play on words to make it sound like I was saying he would. But are you saying A?
Yeah.
It was B.
Oh.
Yeah, there were some of the boys who saw Abbott and Costello Meet the Wolfman, and they like found Bela Lugosi's phone number in the Yellow Pages and just called him. And they became friends.
Legends.
Darling. Well, Cal, thank you so much for being on.
Of course.
If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on Cinema Cemetery, email us at djscinema.cemetery@gmail.com. The intro and outro themes were created by Ditto Master, and you can find his work on YouTube and Spotify. Thanks again, Cal, for joining me tonight.
Yeah.
And
nobody else gets to be for the Reanimator episode. I get to be there for the Reanimator episode.
And when you can see From Beyond, you gotta be here for From Beyond.
Of course.
This has been DJ Spectre, and if you ever feel the draw to come back to the Cinema Cemetery, you can find us again at Paint.